Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, France 24, and Radio Havana Cuba. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Donald Trump has threatened to sue the BBC for $1 billion because of an edit they made to his speech given on January 6, 2020, the day that hundreds of his supporters forced their way into the U.S. Capitol and vandalized it. The edit was in the show Panorama that aired October 2024, just before the election. The BBC Director General and the news CEO have resigned after the criticism. An interview with David Kaye, a professor of law at University of California, Irvine. Radio Deutsche Welle.
Donald Trump is threatening the BBC with a $1 billion lawsuit over what his lawyers say were defamatory edits to a speech he gave just before the 2021 US Capitol riots. The British broadcaster has admitted to using the misleading edits and issued an apology. The scandal has prompted the resignations of the BBC's top executive and its news chief.
The BBC is facing an unprecedented leadership crisis. Director General Tim Davey and news chief Deborah Turness have both resigned following accusations of editorial bias in the organization. The crisis centers on a leaked internal memo that flagged anti-Trump bias in the BBC's coverage of last year's US election. Most damaging was how the Panorama program edited a speech by the US president, making it appear he incited the January 6 Capitol riots. Outgoing news chief Deborah Turness insists the mistakes do not imply bias.
I stepped down over the weekend because the buck stops with me. But I'd like to make one thing very clear. BBC News is not institutionally biased. That's why it's the world's most trusted news provider.
The chair of the BBC's board apologised in a letter to Parliament, calling the incident an error of judgment.
We had commissioned research into how well we'd covered the US elections. And that was quite a substantial piece of research. And just for the sake of providing full picture, the overall conclusion was that we'd done it extremely well, properly, impartially. We did a good job. There were areas of concern of which the Panorama edit was one. Now, in hindsight, it would have been better to have acted earlier. But we didn't.
Many around the world rely on the BBC for impartial news, which is regulated by its own charter. But ultimately, the broadcaster is funded by the public and has to maintain their trust. The BBC now has to replace its leadership to keep it focused on covering the news rather than becoming the story.
Well, let's explore this Trump lawsuit with David Kaye, who is a professor of law at the University of California, Irvine. He's also a former UN special rapporteur on the promotion and protection of the right to freedom of opinion and expression. Welcome to DW, Professor. President Trump does have a record of threatening legal action against media organizations. In the US, this action has been characterized as a way for him to try and control or bully the media. Now he's threatening Britain's BBC with a $1 billion lawsuit. Do you think he has a case?
No, I don't think he has a case at all. And I do think it's important to see what President Trump is doing here in the context of his overall pressure on the media. And even more broadly, if you look at the pattern according to which President Trump has acted, it's been in the context of any kind of criticism of him, any kind of editorial choices that might present him in an unfavorable light, even in the context of this Panorama case, which may have involves some unfortunate editing actually seems, on the surface of it, to capture a narrative that many people understand to have been accurate in the context of Trump's involvement in the January 6th insurrection. So I think it is absolutely important to see this as part of a pattern rather than seeing this simply as some mistake by the BBC in any way. I am not saying that the editorial choice that the BBC made in this context was the editorial choice that any other editor, any other media outlet should have made or in fact did make. That's not the point I was trying to make. And I do think that there is a way in which you can see BBC in this context taking responsibility in the context of, you know, looking back, they see as problematic editorial choices. Whether that should have resulted in the resignations of the top two people, whether we can understand that in a kind of abstract, in the way that the BBC director general was just talking in your lead up clip, that maybe they should have done something earlier. But in the context of the pattern of Donald Trump's pressure on the media, I don't think it's possible to separate it from the actual fact of what happened in that Panorama program. We have to see those things connected, and we have to see it connected in the context of the broader attack on independent media and editorial choices.
How then do you believe the BBC should respond to this billion-dollar lawsuit?
Well, they should clearly fight it. I mean, look, this is an issue that I think DW, CNN, public broadcasters and private broadcasters around the world need to be paying attention to very carefully, because any time that they make an editorial choice that seemingly, maybe it's correct, maybe it's incorrect, we've seen the pattern from Donald Trump, doesn't really matter whether it's correct or incorrect, he will come after you with a massive lawsuit. And the question for outlets at the moment, certainly for independent media, is do you simply find some accommodation with that? In which case, it will only incentivize further pressure on the media and, frankly, less access to information by the audience, or do they fight it? Do they defend themselves? In which case, these are cases that are eminently winnable. These are cases in which we're talking about independent media freedom, political speech that is protected not only by the First Amendment in the United States, but by the law governing freedom of expression around the world, including in human rights law. What are the outlets going to do? And I think it's absolutely essential for them to defend themselves and to fight these kinds of claims, unless they want to be in the position of consistently having to deal with this kind of pressure.
Thanks for guiding us through that, Professor. Professor David Kay from the University of California, Irvine.
That report and interview were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, and most podcast sites, as is the Shortwave Report. On to NHK World Radio Japan. The head of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, has called for global cooperation to help it maintain its independence and impartiality. A second typhoon came ashore in the Philippines and Asia this week. More than 150 countries are officially attending the United Nations Climate Change Conference, COP30, in Brazil. The Trump administration chose not to attend and has also withdrawn from the Paris Agreement. An unofficial coalition of U.S. state and municipal governments and private companies are attending in Brazil as America is all in. NHK Japan.
The head of the International Criminal Court has called for global cooperation to help it maintain its independence and impartiality. This comes amid growing pressure on the court from major powers. ICC President Akane Tomoko spoke at the United Nations General Assembly on Tuesday. The Japanese judge has been serving as president since last year. The ICC has a mandate to try individuals charged with genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and aggression. Some countries have been putting pressure on the court in recent years. In 2023, Russia placed Akane on a wanted list after the ICC issued an arrest warrant for President Vladimir Putin on war crimes charges for the invasion of Ukraine. And earlier this year, the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump announced sanctions on some ICC judges. It condemned the court's arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and others in connection with the war in the Gaza Strip. Akane expressed her concerns about the current state of affairs, saying coercion poses a serious threat to the administration of justice.
The judges of the International Criminal Court act without fear or favor. When these judges are pressured, threatened, or undermined, the credibility of international law itself weakened.
Akane added the ICC will continue to act with full independence and impartiality. Many countries expressed their support for the speech, but the representative of Israel, which is a non-member, responded by accusing the ICC of making repeated attempts to assert jurisdiction where there is none.
Typhoon Fongwong has unleashed floods and powerful winds in the Philippines, leaving at least two people dead. It's now moving north-northwest through the South China Sea and could make landfall in Taiwan on Wednesday. The typhoon came ashore Sunday night in the northern island of Luzon, forcing more than a million people to evacuate. Homes and other buildings were severely damaged. Just last week, Typhoon Kalmegi tore through the country, leaving more than 200 people dead and over 100 missing. It caused extensive damage in central Philippines, especially in popular resort areas of Cebu Province. Officials are urging people in areas threatened by Fongwong to be on alert for flooding and mudslides.
Representatives from more than 150 countries and regions are gathering in Brazil to discuss measures for dealing with climate change. The COP30 UN conference begins Monday in Belém, a city in the Amazon region. But the world's second largest emitter of carbon dioxide, the United States, is not there. Earlier, Yamasa Arina and I spoke with our correspondent Komi Arisa in Belém. So, Lisa, do you think meaningful progress can be made without the participation of the United States?
Given the alarming realities of the climate crisis being reported around the world, progress is no longer optional. It is imperative. A leaders' meeting was held last week, and the United States was absent from there as well. Some leaders directly criticized U.S. President Trump, who withdrew his nation from the Paris Agreement, for turning his back on global climate action. Their frustration reflects just how seriously many countries view the situation. But a coalition of U.S. state and municipal governments, along with private companies, has pledged to continue pursuing the goals of the Paris Agreement, regardless of the Trump administration. It's known as America is All In. California Governor Gavin Newsom, a member of this coalition, is attending the COP meeting and has vowed to show how his state will contribute to tackling climate change. Experts say it will be crucial for other nations to strengthen cooperation with these U.S. local governments and private sector actors to maintain momentum in the fight against global warming.
NHK World's Komi Arisa reporting from Belém, Brazil.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 9 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK may be easily found at most podcast sites. Next, France 24. Three press reviews. First, the international papers on the opening of COP30 without an official delegation from the United States and whether past conferences have made a difference. Then, international papers on China as the new leader in the renewable energy expansion. Finally, press reviews on AI as a Trojan horse. France 24.
To Brazil now for this next one. COP30 opening its doors today. What are the papers saying on this one?
Lots of coverage about COP30, a lot of analysis and opinion pieces. Let's start with Lysico here in France. They have this analysis piece today. It says that making the progress needed could be mission impossible. And their headline here reads, even if Jesus was the president of COP, the results would still be insufficient. Brazil will have a crucial role during the summit, acting as a pivot between the global south and the global north, and hoping to find the middle ground. Libération also covering COP here with this analysis piece. It's looking at who is not attending the conference. It says that the United States have never been less engaged. The article says that Donald Trump has never believed in human-induced climate change and describes his policies as a crusade against the Paris Agreement. Politico, also looking at this here, it says that Trump's COP30 snub has thrown Europe into a role it is not ready for. But without the US, it says the EU will bear the brunt of the demands levelled at rich countries. Back to France with Humanité here. They're looking at who is attending the conference, mainly fossil fuel lobbyists. The article says there are wolves among the sheep. It looks at different strategies that lobbyists use to disrupt the climate talks, often dissimulating their identities or even by having party badges within official delegations. Meanwhile, a lot of the coverage is looking at whether or not these climate conferences are actually useful. This is an article in The Times here, which says that COPs have failed and that climate realism is needed. It says that climate change is just getting worse and that future generations will be appalled by the levels of inaction. But on the other side, we've got an article here in The Conversation by a professor at the University of Sheffield, and it says that COPs are working, just not the way critics think they do. He argues that emissions are rising much more slowly now that they would have been without the UN regime. The article says that dismissing the UN climate conferences as pointless risks slowing the progress they need.
Now, COP30, of course, is continuing. We've been talking about it a lot here on France 24. Without the US, though, but many eyes are turning instead to China, which is seeing a renewable energy boom. And the papers are talking about this.
Yeah, a lot of articles on China and some climate good news for once. This is an article in The Guardian here today. China's CO2 emissions have been flat or falling for the past 18 months, according to a recent analysis. The world's largest polluter has managed to hit its target of peak CO2 emissions much earlier than planned. And this is because of its huge increase in solar and wind power, which grew by 46 and 11% last year, respectively. Now, there's a lot of coverage, as I said, on China and this renewables boom. The New York Times here is saying that a flood of green tech from China is upending global climate politics as the US abandons climate action and Europe struggles to realise its ambition. This article says that countries like Brazil, India or Vietnam are rapidly expanding their solar and wind power. And the key to that is China, which is exporting its technology across the globe. Now, the Los Angeles Times, though, asks, will that be enough to curb global warming? Xi Jinping announced that China would cut its greenhouse gas emissions by 7 to 10%. But climate experts say that China would have to reduce its emissions by 30% to be on track with the Paris agreements. Now, the Financial Times is covering another challenge here. It says, can China decarbonize the world's factory floor? It says that although this progress is impressive and has given China leverage in climate change diplomacy, the hardest is yet to come. And the article explains that decarbonizing energy intensive industries is an eye-watering challenge. Now, finally on this, a look from China. This is from CGTN, which says that China is capitalizing on its successes by moving into the climate leadership void left by the United States. The article says that the Chinese model stands out as an example of how to balance development targets with climate change concerns.
Artificial intelligence, we go on to now, continues to make headlines around the world, including in L'Humanité today. What do you have for us?
Yeah, loads of stories on different aspects of AI. It's on the front page of Humanité here in France. It calls artificial intelligence a Trojan horse against the job market. It says AI offers an excuse for mass layoffs and that young professionals are the first on the firing line. It says that tech giants, not AI, are those responsible for the infamous job apocalypse. Now, youth unemployment in the US, for instance, has gone from 4.8% to 5.8% in a year alone. And it says that regulation is needed to ensure that the job market can stay accessible. Time magazine, though, says that regulation is not enough and that AI morals are needed. The article says that what's missing is not another rule book, but a human moral compass. The danger, according to this article, is not that machines develop too much intelligence, but that we stop exercising our own. The New Scientist is talking about our intelligence and artificial intelligence. It says that AI is reducing our ability to think clearly and critically, but there are some benefits to it. The article says that cognitive offloading, as in using AI to reduce mental burden, could help us improve mental accuracy and efficiency. All this to say that AI is not necessarily making us stupid, but the way we are using it might be.
Those press reviews were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, also most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the Shortwave Report or could help support this show, like longtime supporters in Willits and Modesto did this week, PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490. Your donations are essential for this weekly production and distribution of this show, which I supply freely to more than 100 radio stations across the globe. And if you're listening to this on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The mayor of Chicago asked the United Nations Human Rights Council to investigate the U.S. government immigration crackdown. Trump says the U.S. is boycotting the G20 summit in South Africa. The U.S. military has continued extrajudicial killings of people allegedly transporting drugs to the U.S. Israeli air raids and drone attacks continue in Gaza. The United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, has warned that the occupied West Bank is facing its worst displacement crisis in 50 years. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson is calling on the United Nations to investigate the U.S. federal government over what he calls its abusive immigration crackdown in the city of Chicago. Johnson addressed members of the U.N. Human Rights Council. He said, "I call on this council to hold the federal government of the United States to the same standards of accountability that you apply elsewhere in the world. No country should be above international law. Human rights are universal, or they are meaningless. Chicago has long been part of this struggle, and I invite you, the UN representatives, to visit Chicago to witness both our challenges and our progress firsthand. And I urge the Human Rights Council of the United Nations to consider additional measures of accountability, including a special session to examine the worsening human rights crisis in the United States." U.S. President Donald Trump says that the United States is boycotting the G20 summit hosted by South Africa over what he claims is the persecution of white farmers. Trump has repeatedly accused the government of South African President Cyril Ramaphosa of failing to protect Afrikaners, the white minority that ruled the country during apartheid, and has falsely stated a white genocide is taking place in South Africa. Not true. Trump said on his social network, Truth Social, that the United States will be hosting the 2026 G20 summit in Miami. The Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, has announced that a U.S. military killed six people on Sunday in two more strikes on boats in the eastern Pacific. Since early September, the Pentagon has claimed responsibility for 19 attacks on boats that the United States has said, without any evidence whatsoever, they are carrying drugs in the Pacific and the Caribbean, killing at least 76 people. These strikes come as the Pentagon, or the War Department, is deploying its largest warship, the huge USS Gerald R. Ford aircraft carrier, to join a buildup of U.S. forces in the Caribbean. Israeli air raids and drone attacks continue in Gaza. Despite the so-called ceasefire brokered by the United States, Donald Trump, that went into effect over a month ago, Al Jazeera reports that at least two people, including a child, were killed in southern Gaza on Monday. One eyewitness in Khan Yunis, Nidal Abu Arak, said, "The future is bleak and uncertain. Given our current situation, things remain as they are. Truce? No truce. We do not see a truce or ceasefire. The war is ongoing, and the horizon is dark. We see the country's situation is very difficult." The United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, has warned that the occupied West Bank is facing its largest displacement crisis in more than five decades, more than 50 years, driven by intensifying Israeli military raids and violence by illegal settlers. In a post on social media, UNRWA said that it is leading the emergency response to the largest displacement crisis since 1967 across the West Bank, including occupied East Jerusalem. One in four displaced families are still unable to return to their homes, the UN agency said, and the United Nations Agency for Refugees, UNRWA, further added that it has been receiving only 13 tons of waste daily in communities hosting forcibly displaced people. As part of its efforts to support sanitation services, much more needs to be done. This warning comes amid months of intensifying Israeli raids, home demolitions, settlement attacks across the occupied West Bank, which have displaced thousands of Palestinians since the onset of the genocidal war in Gaza by Israel in October of 2023. In late September this year, UNRWA reported that more than 42,000 Palestinians had been forced from their homes due to the ongoing Israeli offensive. Since the escalating violence, the agency said it continues to provide services to more than 920,000, almost 1 million Palestinian refugees across the occupied territories.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.